It's the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are here with me in the studio, and that music is the theme to Inside Comedy, David Steinberg's interview show that airs on Showtime and is about to start a brand new season this Tuesday night with a couple of great guests, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert. And then later on, he gets to people like Wanda Sykes and Dan Aykroyd, Cheech and Chong, Michael Keaton, Ted Danson, Bryan Cranston, Conan O'Brien, Jeffrey Tambor, Carol Leifer. That's quite a season, and if you've not seen the show in the past, you absolutely have to see the premiere episode on Tuesday night on Showtime with Stewart and Colbert, because it is real insight into both of them, and that's because of this gentleman here. David Steinberg, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you, Paul. Thanks for supporting it. I love that.
It's my pleasure. I know you were on Jimmy Fallon last night and returned to your old haunt there from your days on the Carson show. And before we talk about Inside Comedy, I have to ask you about a story that a friend of mine named Mark Evanier wrote about recently on his blog. He found a picture that he thinks was from 1970 or so, and it was a picture taken at a Friar's Roast of Jack Benny. And Carson is in the picture with Alan King, Ed Sullivan, Dennis Day, Phil Harris, Jack Benny, George Burns, and Milton Berle. And here's what he says. He says, David Steinberg was guest hosting The Tonight Show that evening while Mr. Carson was elsewhere in the building taping that roast.
Oh, yes. No, wow, that's incredible. Yes, I would never forget that, actually.
Okay, here's what he says, and maybe you can verify the story for me. He says, you were interviewing some guest when all of a sudden Milton Berle walked out on stage, absolutely unannounced. True?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
well, then instead of me telling the story, you tell the story. What happened?
Well, it was Milton Berle who walked out, and then I went back to the guest. I can't remember who the poor guest was for that evening. And then Jack Benny walked out, and the audience, of course, went nuts. Jack Benny had to just look. You know, he would hold his elbow and his hand on his face and looked at me, and he just said, "Too young. You're too young." and just looked out at the audience. And then finally I said, well, this is one of the most exciting evenings, and thank you so much. The audience was going crazy, and now let's get back to doing the show. And then Johnny Carson walked out.
Johnny Carson walked out as a guest surprise appearance on his own show.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It was just a way in which it's a surprise. The version of comedians is they're dark and they're drugged and they're drunk and they're unhappy and all of that. What I experienced was this incredible camaraderie that they all had. You know, they all do the same. It's all this a form of a metaphorical bullfighting that you're doing with an audience and trying to win them over all the time. Everyone knows how hard that is to do and get laughs from the audience. And these guys were pros and didn't really need writers to write for them, and that was a remarkable evening. I haven't thought about it for so long, and part of all of this is that because that was in New York, there are no tapes of it, because one of the reasons that Johnny Carson was so angry at NBC most of the time is they didn't collect any of his early shows until he got to Los Angeles.
Yeah, whatever there was on tape, they erased the tape and used it for game shows.
That just was amazing that they would do that.
Now, here's the part of the story that you haven't mentioned, and Mark wrote about this. He said, So Carson came out, and everybody went apoplectic, and then the ruckus died down, and Carson, now seated in the guest chair opposite you, explained, we can only stay a minute because we're on a break from taping the Kraft Music Hall salute to Benny. And you laughed, and Johnny asked you, what are you laughing at? And you grinned and said, I was just thinking about how wonderful the rest of the show is going to be after all of you leave.
Yes, right. How happy the audience is going to be when you all leave. They're like so let down to be just left with me. It's unbelievable.
And you probably had another 45 minutes to an hour because it was a 90-minute show.
Of what a letdown.
All right, well, I'm glad Mark wrote that story so that you can remember it and verify that it did happen.
Oh, it absolutely did happen. I'm glad to be reminded of it. I forgot about it because it was, it was in New York, and I, you know, I'm such a young person to be hosting the show, And I'm never arrogant about it, but I think when I was young, I thought, oh yeah, hey, I deserve this. Now I realize how lucky I was to have those guys. But again, it was their respect for each other that they included me and wanted to sort of welcome me in. And I was very controversial even then. And that was a memorable an evening as ever.
And by the way, that sort of thing would never happen on a contemporary late night talk show because nothing spontaneous is allowed to happen like that.
No. Now you're coordinated by someone, and the guest, the host, has to know what you're going to say, and you know that's where they go now.
Yeah, I don't think David Letterman's ever been surprised by a walk-on. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah,
hey,
true.
Before you get into the show, I have a question for David. Do you find the camaraderie with the comedians today like there was back then?
What's your question, Dad? Is it the same?
Yeah, is it the same, or do you think it's drifted away?
It's a strong version of it. You know, today I was with Alan Zweibel here in New York, a writer friend who wrote, of course, on Saturday Night Live for years,
yep.
Producer. And Brad Garrett was at the restaurant, and he would just I know Brad Garrett so well, and the maitre d' came over and said, Brad Garrett wants to know if he can come over and talk to you. I said, of course he can come over and talk to us. But he was so respectful and so, flattering in a way. And Brad Garrett, incidentally, who most people know just from Everybody Loves Raymond, is a spectacular stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
And he's one of the tallest Jews I know.
Well, I like the fact that you didn't say, hold on a second, let my segment producer go over and pre-interview him.
Yes. Yeah, I have fought that my whole life. And in inside comedy, that one of the great pleasures of the show for me is that it's totally spontaneous.
Yeah.
I don't prepare anything. In fact, I won't even look at research on anyone or biography, any of that. I want it to be me with them. Now, a lot of them I know, but still, it's a totally spontaneous conversation, and that's what I think. People don't even know why they're liking it, but that might be it.
I think the spontaneity definitely has something to do with it. Now, let me play a clip from the show that's going to air this Tuesday night on Showtime.
Okay.
This is you with Stephen Colbert talking about your shared history.
Okay. So, Stephen, we have Second City in common.
We do, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I was there way before you.
But there were pictures of you on the wall. There was a picture of you as a priest. I believe you were a rabbi wearing a priest collar.
Exactly.
Being a very reformed Jew.
That's exactly right. Yes. I felt that was where reformed Judaism was going, and so I went there. Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, I don't know about in your day, but we had to go learn like 30 years of what was considered the best sketches, you know, to take it on the road.
Well, to let you know how old I am, we had to learn a year and a half.
Seriously?
Honest to God.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, there was only one company before it.
That is classic. And I think he was genuinely surprised, David.
Oh, he was totally surprised. It was because I go back to I was one of the youngest people in that wonderful company with Alan Arkin and Barbara Harris, and they were amazing. And Second City is a touchstone that it keeps everyone together. That's a community that supports each other. Always, you know, when the directors, when these actors become writers and producers, they're always looking for the improvisational sort of Second City style, which has now become huge. The difference between even in those years to now is comedy has, in not necessarily good way, has become corporate in some way. It's become an establishment sort of version of how you make money. And that was not the reason almost anyone went into it in my day.
Mm-hmm.
You went into it because you felt you had a point of view and you wanted to get it out there, and that was it.
And in fact, Stephen Colbert tells you on this show why he wanted to do what you were doing at Second City.
Instantly, I thought this was something I would like. For some reason, I had an instinct. And I went down and I watched it, and I thought, this is for me. I have to improvise. I have to find some way to improvise. I had to get up on stage. And And in no small part, because you didn't have to memorize lines. I've got a very good memory. I can memorize lines quickly. So learning the lines has never been a problem for me. But I liked not having to know my lines. I liked the freedom of having to finding another reaction in the moment and that being good.
Yeah.
Oh, not being...
not being whatever he was supposed to be because somebody else said he was going to be that. Oh, yeah. And I'm fascinated by that because...
see his enthusiasm for how important that was to his whole career, and it almost for any of us who came through that.
And he became unique, I think, in recent comedy history because he was improvising on the Colbert Report in character every night, which is very tough, isn't it?
That is the toughest thing. I don't know how you decide to do that and make that work in any way. And the surprise is how charming and smart he is for real. And that's what we'll get when he starts hosting the show. And I think he'll do great. He's just a real connected major brain out there. And it's going to be just another great contribution, I think.
Now, I'm curious about the line between improv and stand-up, which you did both of those things brilliantly in the early part of your career for quite a few years. I tried stand-up comedy at one point when I was very young. And I liked it, even though I didn't do well on stage. I kind of liked it, but... one of the things about doing radio is every day I've got to come up with something new, whereas in stand-up, you've got to work the same 5, 10, 20, 30 minutes until you've honed it and then can take it out and then do that same act night after night after night. Sometimes you go on the road with that act and you do it for a year if you're working the comedy club circuit. Is that what you had to go through, and how different and hard was that compared to you with your Second City improv training?
Well, the Second City improv training, I was there for quite a few years. I was sort of the youngest guy of most companies. And I just had I've been funny, a version of funny my whole life, really. Since I was 16, even in Winnipeg in Canada, I'd be on stage talking and all that, never, ever having seen a performance of anyone, never having seen an entertainer, growing up with radio and all of that. So Second City is a revelation as you discover yourself and find out how your mind could work quickly like that. Stand-up comedy is odd in that you can only succeed, only succeed by failure. So it doesn't matter how well written your piece is. The audience will tell you where it's funny. And sometimes it's not even in the piece, it's off to the side of it, and you have to be able to make that move or rewrite it for the next day into where you felt the audience was most attentive, and sometimes it's not even in their laughter, it's just how they listen. Once you start to feel the sort of intensity of their listening to you, that's when you're starting to make it as a stand-up comedian. And as you suggest, it isn't easy. It's very difficult. On the other hand, I'm in New York now, and I just got in, and I just emailed Larry David, who's doing the play on Broadway, as I'm sure you know, and he's going crazy with the fact that he's doing the same words every night, over and over again, and you can't improvise, you can't break from him, and he wrote everything, so it's not like it's a burden for him terribly. But it's got to be odd for Larry at this point. He's been doing it, I think he's got another 6 weeks of it. But you're doing 8 shows a week and repeating everything that you're done. And Larry's so naturally spontaneous. That's how we write Curb Your Enthusiasm. We write it very written and then put it on its feet, and then we just keep on improvising. And so here he's doing the opposite, and I'm sure it's frustrating him like crazy. On the other hand, he wrote a play on Broadway, and the ticket, you can't get a ticket to it, so hot.
Now, the other guy you've got on Tuesday night's premiere of Inside Comedy on Showtime is Jon Stewart, who, of course, gave Stephen Colbert his start. And here's a little clip of the two of you together from this Tuesday night's show.
Okay. The Marx Brothers had... Margaret Dumont to pick on. You have the Fox Network.
They are considered the Margaret Dumont of news, from what I've been told. That was Roger Ailes' original slogan.
That's what made him an innovator.
Was, yeah. It was, exactly. Yeah. Comedy through misunderstanding, I think, was.
Yeah.
That's Jon Stewart with David Steinberg from Inside Comedy. You mentioned Margaret Dumont and the Marx Brothers, and I think there might be some personal history there with you.
Well, yes, there is. Groucho, when I got my first television show, which was Music Scene, sort of a very innovative version of Saturday Night Live with a lot of committee and Second City people in it, Groucho was my guest. And he came on, and we got to know each other. I got to know him earlier because I was writing his Broadway play, which was Minnie's Boys, which eventually his son and another very talented writer ended up doing, because I just couldn't. I was busy with my show at the time, but I couldn't believe that I became a friend of Groucho's. And he would introduce me to his group, you know, Harry Ruby, who wrote all those wonderful songs from the movies and all of that, and Nunnally Johnson, the producer of movies in the 50s. And it was amazing. It was just amazing. I'm in my 20s. I could still remember my haftorah from my bar mitzvah. That's how young I was.
And here you are with a real comedy icon.
Oh, a Mount Rushmore of comedy with Groucho and all, and George Burns and all these people that he had me have lunch with. I was the kid.
Wow. Wow. Now, about Jon Stewart, you recorded your interview with him before he announced that he's going to be leaving. We know August 6th will be his last show on The Daily Show. What do you think his impact has been, David?
I think that he affected a kind of political sensibility and comedy that I don't think we'll ever see anyone quite like that. He is exceptionally smart. And exceptionally funny. I mean, if he didn't have politics and didn't have that point of view, he would still be at least a great comedy writer, and he's just got that comedy mind. But the way in which he approaches politics and the boldness and the courage of taking the most minority positions and knowing that you're going to lose a lot of the audience with it, and none of that bothers him. It's his point of view, and it's his thumbprint, and he's doing it all in a way that's right, and I don't think anyone is going to be like John again.
I think he's also our preeminent media critic.
Yes, he's, you know, that's his job. He comments on himself and the world around him, the television world, the radio world, the social media. He's on all of it. And he has a very, you know, his opinion offends maybe 40% of his audience. And he lives with that.
But they come back the next night to see, what's he going to make me mad about tonight?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, that's exactly right.
Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert will be the guests on the first episode of the new season of Inside Comedy with David Steinberg, Tuesday night on Showtime, followed by Wanda Sykes and Dan Aykroyd, Cheech and Chong, Michael Keaton, Ted Danson, Bryan Cranston, Conan O'Brien, Jeffrey Tambor, and Carol Leifer. That's quite a season. I'm looking forward to seeing all of it. Thanks so much for coming back on to talk again, David.
Thank you so much. It's so great to talk to you. I always enjoy it. Let's hope I'm doing enough next year so you want to talk to me again.
You know what? Even if you're doing nothing, I want to talk to you again.
Thank you so much.
But I don't wish that upon you.
No, that would be unbelievable. I can't imagine what life like that is like.
No, David Steinberg here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.